Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Happy Monday. Dave Spano on a business trip on an airplane this morning, so it's a pleasure to be joined by Brian Jacobson, the chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. Brian, happy Monday to you.
Yes, happy Monday to you as well.
Of course. I got to ask you this Diet Coke question quick. As I said in the opening, I'm walking through Walgreens this morning, $9.99 for a 12-pack of Diet Coke. What? Give us the economic analysis there. Like, have you seen a rise in the soda prices lately?
Yeah, I have, actually. And, you know, a lot goes into that, of course. I mean, you've got the aluminum cans, and we have to pay attention to what's going on with the commodity markets there, all the inputs into it. And plus, consider where you were as well. Is it the same price there? They might charge a little premium for the convenience of buying it at a Walgreens as opposed to if you go to a Walmart or a Target or, you know, maybe better yet, a Costco.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And it's always that kind of complex interplay between economic indicators and monetary policy and market sentiment, for sure. And I think we saw that last week with the labor market, right? I mean, does a strong labor market with a strong jobs report impact what the Fed's monetary decision is going to be? And what do you think, as we're a week away from inauguration, I mean, what do you think incoming President Trump thinks about the jobs report from last week?
Yeah, I was hoping that he would have put something out on social media about some sort of reaction to it, but I didn't see anything.
No,
he does tend to wear his heart on his sleeve a little bit, but I think it is a little difficult to say that he's inheriting a horrible economy when you have that 256,000 number. Now, keep in mind, though, a lot of that strength did come from government hiring and healthcare, which aren't exactly the most economically sensitive parts of the economy. And when we look at manufacturing, that still is shutting jobs. So from the macro picture, it's hard to say things are going badly, but everybody's micro economy could be very different. Will this affect the Fed? You know, they probably liked this report because they aren't really that worried about a strong labor market fanning the flames of inflation anyways, because there just isn't a lot of evidence to say that a strong labor market does cause inflation. It tends to be too loose of monetary policy, too loose of fiscal policy, supply chain shocks, things like that. And so it does mean that they can take their time. They can cut back on the pace of rate cuts or just be on sort of this pregnant pause for a while, which is probably what the market is pricing in.
Does a declining unemployment put additional inflation at risk or more in focus, if you will?
It does put it more in focus, and I think that's what the market was reacting to, and that's where we have to look at what does the market do versus what is the Fed likely to do. Because, you know, good news can be good news. It can also be bad news if it means that the Fed is likely going to make a mistake. I think the Fed is just going to look through this and say, you know what, it's fine. Let's just focus on inflation. But the market, you know, you saw yields move up, stock prices go down. A lot of that was because there is that lingering fear that the strong labor market, low unemployment rate could make it more difficult to hit that 2% inflation target over time.
Yeah, and the jobs report, I think, is also kind of fueled a Wall Street fear of kind of a lose-lose market scenario. What are some of the strategies, and you put it perfectly, there's micro and there's macro, but what are some of the strategies that investors can adopt in this potential kind of new scenario we're in?
Yeah, it is going to cause, I think, some what's sometimes called cognitive dissonance, where you see, oh, it's good news, but the market's down, right? So how can good news be bad news? And it's mainly because there's the fear that the Fed is going to do something to mess things up. But they don't seem inclined to hike rates. So as long as they keep talking about, you know, we're just going to pause, I think we're going to recover from this, it'll be fine. But one of the best things people can probably do is just look at their portfolio and make sure that it's aligned with their long-term goals. And part of that is to make sure that you are managing liquidity properly, meaning that if you have certain financial obligations coming due within the next month, the next year, even the next year and a half, don't necessarily have that tied up in the stock market, because, you know, you can have great years like we did in 2023 and 2024, but then you can also have a bad year. And you don't want that money to be at risk if it's to meet some short-term obligation. So I think that this is a great opportunity to assess that liquidity picture.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have enough stashed away in like money markets, savings accounts, things that are very liquid where you can be assured that you are going to have that money available to you if you do have some sort of expenditure coming up? You know, yeah. One of the mantras I use is, if you can't afford to lose your shirt, don't bet your shirt.
That's good. We are talking with Brian Jacobson at NX Wealth Management. When we come back, actually a great question coming in from the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. That's 855-616-1620. A question for Brian. Will the California fires, in quotes, fuel inflation in construction, remodeling, and insurance? Inflation fears in the news cycle for sure. We'll get to that right after this break. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, joined today by Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. So, Brian, as we look at inflation, is there a psychological impact on consumer behavior and economic confidence? And how will that work into inflation fears with construction and rebuilding, especially in the devastation in California?
Yeah, that devastation in California is just heart-wrenching to see. Yeah. And some of the estimates, they range anywhere from, you know, like $20 billion up to almost $200 billion, depending upon what you want to include in that calculation. Just looking at some back-of-the-envelope calculations for to rebuild, let's say with the home construction that might need to take place, if there's about $20 billion increase there, you know, consider that last year lumber sales in the U.S. were around $240 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden you would have like this 10% increase, and that could affect, you know, lumber prices, construction prices, things along those lines. Anytime we get these natural disasters, you do tend to see some sort of economic effect there across the economy. Now, in terms of some of the psychology, you know, if people think inflation is going to rise, that can oftentimes encourage them to spend more today rather than tomorrow, since prices might be higher in the future. And so that in itself can make inflation almost a self-fulfilling expectation. It's one of the reasons why the Federal Reserve, they really do focus on inflation expectations. What are people thinking inflation might be? So last Friday, we got that University of Michigan consumer sentiment report out. And one of the questions they ask in there is about people's expectations for inflation over the next 5 to 10 years. And that went up to about 3.3%. which is the highest that it's been since 2008. So unfortunately, inflation expectations are on the rise again here.
Mm-hmm. Is there a sweet spot for inflation that maximizes economic growth?
Yeah, you know, there's almost a sweet range as far as some of the estimates here. It can go anywhere from like 2% to 4% is kind of based on the data, just looking at other countries, trying to figure out, you know, their growth rates, what was their inflation, and what can really be almost that target. And for many central banks, they have adopted 2% as the inflation target. That started with the Central Bank of New Zealand, actually in the 1990s. They're the ones who were the first ones to have that inflation target, and other countries have just kind of followed suit, saying, yeah, that sounds pretty good, because it gives them some flexibility in terms of cutting rates if they need to, increasing rates. Now, I think there's quite a few people who would say, well, why not 0% inflation, right? Yeah. I mean, do we need it?
Mm-hmm.
You have in the Federal Reserve's mandate from Congress, it says that they are supposed to target stable prices, not stable inflation. And so I think some people would argue, is what would be wrong with 0% inflation instead?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, I want to get your input quickly here on your favorite business book. Our next author has a new book called The Business Trip. And there's so many business books out there, especially at the beginning of the year. There's always a bunch of new ones that come out and you're like, oh, I got to read that. From your lens, what are the favorites that are on your list, Brian?
All right. One of my favorites is The Travels of a T-Shirt in the Global Economy. Mm. It's by Petra Rivoli. Okay. It traces the life cycle of a simple T-shirt from the cotton fields of Texas to manufacturing in China and then back to the United States. It's a really fascinating journey just to show how interconnected this world is. So that would probably be my top one because it's an easy read. Uh-huh. It's also quite enlightening.
Yeah. Have you ever read Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, I have. Yeah, very good. He's actually an excellent blogger as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would put that on my list, and I give that book to a lot of people. I think the genius in that book is that he really connects finance to what we were talking about, human psychology, and blends the two really well together. All right, Brian, I appreciate your time. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much.